Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and this week we'll be talking about the BRICS getting into the crypto game, startups getting serviced by fintechs focused just on their needs, and new ideas for student loans and how to pay them back. Please hit subscribe to keep up with these and the latest in FinTech news. All right, let's get started. With me this week is Sean.
Hey, John, good to be here.
Great, glad you're here. And Steve.
What's up, everybody?
What's up, indeed. You know what's up is financings in the fintech world, but we'll get into that.
All right.
So we have a new idea for crypto, as if it needed another one. The BRICS are getting into the game.
Yeah, John.
Wait, sorry, is this crypto for home building?
What's that? No. Close, though. Yeah.
BRICS. What's a BRIC, Sean?
So BRICS, the BRIC countries are the collection of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. So what's going on with the BRICS right now is that they're proposing a new cryptocurrency to deal with settlements, cross-border settlements. Pretty big news for international finance and crypto. And so here's pretty much what happened.
Okay, tell us what happened. So once upon a time,
the CEO of the Russian Direct Investment Fund, they informed the BRICS on Thursday of this new informed plan that may involve them creating a cryptocurrency together to deal with cross-border settlements. So this would be in direct competition to SWIFT, which is the U.S.-backed payment system.
Is there an official BRIC organization like OPEC or OAS?
Yeah, like
I thought it was just a term to kind of denote emerging economies, essentially, like 10 years ago.
So they've come together and done trade deals in the past. They've done other sorts of financial leverage pathways for mainly for trade, but up until this point it's not been crypto at all. So this is the first time they'd be doing a sort of crypto.
Have worked on cooperating on their particular needs.
That's pretty fascinating because it is such a disparate group of countries. So you have China,
that's my
South
first
Africa.
Reaction is
the scale is so different.
Mm-hmm. And well, I know at least Russia and China have motivations to get away from the U.S. dollar and U.S.-backed mm-hmm. institutions.
So yeah,
it makes sense from their perspective.
Yeah, exactly right, John. I mean, they've actually reduced their trade settlements of the dollar from 92% to 50%. So they're really, in the past 5 years.
So what other currency are they using?
So they're using their own nascent currencies, but now the thought is, let's try crypto out. So there's a strong push for them to leverage a SWIFT-style payment system. So in terms of the medium term and long term, if we're looking kind of at the horizon here, it'll be interesting to see if A, they actually launch this cryptocurrency between the nations, and then B, if it performs well. And if it does perform well, that could be an indication for new sorts of cryptocurrency settlement systems that deal with cross-border payments, similar to SWIFT. So really good news for the crypto world, and let's see what happens.
Yeah, sounds like early stages of something, and I wonder how much cooperation they'll get down the line, like India and China are kind of rivals, and if they can get together on something.
Yeah, it also seems like this is the first cross national mm-hmm. sort of a multiple country doing something in the crypto space, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is one of the biggest ones, and it's one of the first if it happens.
If it happens, yeah.
Definitely, SWIFT has definitely been a leader for cross border settlements, but this would be one of the biggest, especially amongst these fast growing nations. So not only is it one of the it would be one of the first big ones, it also would be amongst nations that have really high growth potential, like Brazil, obviously China and India continue to rapidly grow. So
not Russia, though. It's always worth noting that despite their political influence, Russia is actually quite crippled economically.
Mm. Yeah, they're smaller than Italy.
Smaller than Italy, mm. but somehow yield a lot of influence.
And a lot of nuclear weapons and
that's
hypersonic missiles.
And cyber stuff as well. But
Yeah.
Right, cyber, yeah.
Like, but, Steve, you're right. I mean, they really did push this new idea. So they're showing themselves as a leader politically, but they probably have the most upside, or at least one of the biggest upsides in terms of potential to gain by leading this effort. But we'll see. We still don't know.
This is kind of bad news for Ripple, right? They're the ones that are trying to. They've spent so much money and effort to become the world money transfer crypto standard, and now some big players are jumping in.
Mm-hmm. It's also bad news for OFAC, right? So they can no longer control sanctions if it's running on a different network and not
the financial crimes monitoring. Do you know what OFAC stands for?
Office of Foreign Asset Control.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
I used to work for the Treasury Department.
That's right, you did. There you go.
Bam.
Very nice. I just know it's that bad guy tracking thing.
Yeah.
And you're right, though, Steve, because this really is like a way to kind of skirt the sanctions, U.S.-imposed sanctions for some of these countries. So dealing with some of these countries, this payment system would be an attempt to ease trade with those U.S.-sanctioned countries. And so it's bad for OFAC.
So to completely change the subject, Sean.
Steve. Beautiful transition, by the way.
Yes, thank you. Go ahead, Steve. Why don't you walk us into it?
With that introduction, yeah. So we have in front of us here the CB Insights Q3 19 FinTech report. And there's a lot of really interesting things here.
We'll be stealing from this report for the next few episodes.
We will. It's always a highlight to see that. Yeah, absolutely. So there's awesome stuff in here, but there's actually one piece that I found really interesting is the rise of income sharing agreements for student loans.
Yeah, this was interesting. Like, there's some creative way, like we've seen with like home buying, some kind of way to get people to pay off to get into a house. One big burden is student loans. I think I saw it as $1.7 trillion.
It's a $1.7 trillion.
That's not even around the world, right?
That's only in the U.S. of outstanding school debt, which is insane. It's a massive number.
Yeah.
So how does that work? How does the income-driven repayment, how does that work?
Yeah, so it's basically the whole concept is that you borrow money from these companies to go to school, and then based on your outcome, you pay them the money that they
loan you. Some fixed percent,
Some fixed percent, yeah. So they actually highlighted three companies that are pretty interesting here. The first one is Edly, E-D-L-Y. And the whole thing with Edly is that you can actually, they have a marketplace for accredited investors and students. So that you can be a student and say, hey, my name's Sean, I'm going to go to Harvard to study international finance. This is my projected outcome for the next 5-10 years. Pay for my schooling, and I'll give you a percentage of my income over that period of time. So it's actually based on how much money you can make. So you kind of place bets on people that could be high earning potential students.
So companies are paying for this?
This is accredited investors. So if you have, investor. I think, the threshold is, I think, $1 million in investable assets in the U.S., then you can be in this marketplace.
There's always some way to convert cash flows. I love that about finance, right?
Yeah.
With all the derivative. And this is kind of like a derivative.
Right? It is. Yeah.
So like a seed fund. Or there'd be a VC for this purpose, or would it be an individual investor? Or?
It would be individual investors who want to invest in individual students, or I guess tranches of students.
It's,
so if you want to say,
it's just like any other structured product, like a mortgage bond, right?
Right.
You there's nothing up front. Once you have the house, you start getting the payments as a result of that asset. And in this case, I love that the asset is the individual's education and improved earnings potential.
Exactly. And I think they also, I'm sure they kind of rate the students. So if you say you're going to study, if you're getting a PhD in CS from Stanford, that's probably like a AAA, right? But if you're getting an art history degree from SUNY Buffalo, that's probably going to be like junk bonds or something along that space.
Well, right? And then you can slice the cash flows for any individuals too. Yeah. I'm sure they'll be pooled together.
Yeah. Interesting. So
unlike mortgages, where you could maybe go to the underlying and check out the house, you can check out the underlying students in your bond.
Go check out.
And then go, hey, get the hell, get your job. Get out of that McDonald's job. You're killing me
you
here.
You really have to improve on your scores for this year, your grades, right? So, yeah.
So that brings up some new kind of dynamics, right? Because it'd be like an individual investor looking at their investment and saying, maybe they have access to their test scores, or they have access to, their job.
You want all the information
GPA,
you can get.
Yeah.
Because the correlations, sure.
Yeah.
That might
be
a cause for concern, no?
It may be, but I mean,
it also could be good. You know, do you know if these folks, like the investors have a relationship with the students? They could, maybe? Is that?
I don't know. I don't think they would. Yeah, it's probably old numbers.
Hey, if you know someone that's an accredited investor, you probably don't need the loan from...
Yeah, you're right. So it's like a what? It's like, a, let's say, someone who's writing a check for a student in X country, or actually, let's say in the U.S. and X
state. It's only in the U.S., yeah.
And they're not interacting with that person. They're getting data points about that person.
It's like a pool. So it's a behavior among white people. So then behaviors become very predictable when they're in pools and wildly unpredictable at the individual level.
Exactly. So this is basically Lending Club for student debt.
So this is really interesting because if an investor
My bond is not doing well. Two of my students died. And I'm not going to get any cash flow.
That would be good.
Dark.
If an investor has a view on industries, they could probably leverage this as a tool to create good ROI on the industry. So like if an investor thinks that growing pumpkins in 20 years is going to be advantageous, they'll just go into the seed stage of helping people grow pumpkins.
The literal seed stage.
Just go to Davis and Cornell, all those cow colleges, and just make sure that all the students get degrees and pumpkin grow.
No. Well, yeah. I mean, you're investing through someone that's gathering up these. So they're going to diversify, the students across all these, different types of majors and everything, and then offer those bonds outright and then sell a behavior. They don't have to know what the students are doing. They just have to know what that pool is, and then you can slice the cash into whatever risk that you want. It doesn't matter what their individual majors are, or you wouldn't group a pool of similar majors. You would get a diversified pool, and if you want a risky loan, you just get the lower tranche, and if someone wants a safe, stable treasury-like return, they get the top tranche.
Yep.
And then, of course, you can carve up and create any other kind of behavior with special structuring. You can create inverse, reverse floaters, and there's all these crazy things you can do.
So it's kind
reverse,
of like
inverse. They're called inverse floaters, but yeah.
Okay, so this is kind of like a stock market for people, where the share price is contingent on their
like a mortgage bond
salary.
Like the fixed. This is the fixed income market.
Yeah.
So this is but one of the companies. The other one is actually Blair, which also has a really interesting take on this. The whole model is that they will offer you up to $50,000 in educational loans. And they won't collect any payment on that if your income is below $25,000.
Oh, well, I was assuming there'd be a floor, right?
That has to be a floor, yeah. We've all heard stories about people who go to school mostly for the for-profit colleges and then come out with a lot of debt and not a whole lot of job prospects.
And there definitely is not a floor on those student loan payments. They want it no matter what.
They want it no matter what, absolutely, yeah.
So
yeah.
That's an improvement.
It is. So this is a way for them to kind of de-risk that process. And it's also interesting because in this case, investors can invest only up to $20,000.
So in this case, they're just these funds that are giving the capital are just operating as a bank, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's
yeah.
becoming a bank.
Yeah. The other company also in the same space is Stride. They have a kind of a similar model. Actually, I would say this is pretty close to what Blair does. But what they're doing is that they will give you $30,000, not $50,000, in funding. And if you make less than $40,000 after you graduate, they also will not charge you for your loans. So again, I think they probably have more strict underwriting standards, right? Because they have a higher threshold. But the whole concept is, again, if you somehow end up in a low-paying career, then you don't have to pay for your student loans.
And they'll just make up those losses by the other folks who do well.
By the folks who end up banking $300,000 2 years out of business school.
And then paying them an interest until they pay off their debt.
Exactly, yeah.
Wow, really interesting model. And that's a Y Combinator, one of those is a Y Combinator company?
Stride has been funded by Slow Ventures, GSV, Sign Adventures, and Strata Education Network. Mm-hmm. And Blair is actually the Y Combinator company.
Okay.
Yeah. So you'll have investors and your mother calling you to get a better job.
Yeah. So I told you to go to medical school.
And a girlfriend. They'll all be on you about this.
Should have been a lawyer, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Cool. So, John, what do you got for us? Some more good information out of the CB Insights report.
They have a lot of great sections this quarter, actually. and some things I hadn't seen before, for sure. I hadn't seen the student lending one. But there's some startups that are focusing on, I should say, some fintechs focusing on the startup market. which is kind of a surprise for me, because I would think that, like, it's so narrow, it's so specialized. Can you really make what investors hope will be this, you know, tens of billions of dollars valuation company with a limited market? But as Brex, the marketing budget at Brex has shown us, I guess there is a, there is a,
so many billboards everywhere.
Yeah. So Brex, if you don't know, is a company started by two very young people out of Brazil. And it's done very well. Their valuation just recently is $2.6 billion. And, you know, they're not the only ones. I think they're the most prominent, but there's other kinds of needs that are being focusing. So they're even chopping the startups down into their specific niches. So there's a company called ClearBank that offers what they say is non-dilutive capital. So, you know, a very attractive market. You're going to want every startup is looking to raise money to meet all their very realistic growth and business plans. But yeah, they charge a flat fee from 6 to 12.5%, and similar to your student loan story, it's a revenue share approach. So yeah, they'll take a look at your financials and offer you some capital. And as we know in finance class, debt is much cheaper than capital, especially if you expect to do well. If you don't, if they're a little too eager to take capital, maybe it's not worth that much.
You know, now so, in Silicon Valley, raising capital, I don't think should be anything that's celebrated. It should be, actually, it's more of a burden. But yeah, to your point, John, I mean, if you can actually, you know, take out debt and perform, in this case, sounds like a better option.
Yeah, it's kind of a flexible too. So you have just a different kind of monkey on your back.
So the kind of the idea here is, like, a ClearBank knows how well you're doing because they are your bank, and they know, do they have access to your, like, accounting data where they can be like, we actually know what kind of debt to issue to these guys because we actually know all of their inflows and outflows of capital, so we can give them an exact sort of, like, you know,
like the business model for a Silicon Valley bank, actually.
Yep.
So they require for Square Capital,
They require you to have all your banking. So they'll give you a loan, a convertible loan, so they get warrants out of it too. So kind of ownership. And but they say, oh, but you have to deposit it in the bank account with us, and we're going to watch every penny that goes in and out. And they focus on venture-backed companies, so they're talking to the VC as well to see if they're going to get another round of financing or what the story is with them.
For an entrepreneur, from an entrepreneur's perspective, it's most efficient and it's very fair and transparent. So from their perspective, it's like, well, I can just go back to actually serving my customers and not have to worry about the, you know, jumping over the hoops for the raise. I can just get what's fair. And then from the perspective of, like, a ClearBank, sounds like what they'll just do is they're getting more transparency of their investment, and they're structuring their products in a way that has the most predictable return. So this sounds like a really
It probably won't be everything that the startup needs if they're they're managing their risk. But it's another pathway to capital. There's also another company called Vouch that's focused on commercial insurance targeting startups. I would never think that
it's such a narrow niche market.
The insurance broker for some startups, and then say, "Hey, I can do better than."
So, what's an example of this sort of, like, commercial insurer for targeting startups? What is that?
Well, they say that the small business insurance market was $100 billion as of 2017. So, okay, maybe it's not that niche as I thought. But they've just been in, and I haven't heard this since the first dot-com boom, but they just came out of stealth mode.
Nice.
Yeah, in case in case one of the other fintechs says, hey, commercial insurance, we were just thinking about that.
Yep.
Great idea. I don't think you needed to be in stealth mode, Vouch, by the way.
So what's an example, John, of when a startup is going to need insurance? Is this, like, just to protect against lawsuits and this sort of that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So there's all the products that they offer, but some of the things you need are D&O insurance. Mm-hmm. So directors and officers on the board. A lot of them won't serve on your board unless they have insurance that they won't get sued later on. And same with the top management, like the C-suite kind of people. Mm-hmm. So for you know, there's of course liability protection depend, and then the rest depends on like liability for whatever products they're creating and all that. And then the rest, it just depends on what business they're doing. So, you know, of course, if you're a fintech, you're gonna have probably high rates.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
Probably a risky kind of prospect. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of ads for this company actually. Mercury.
Yeah, all over the bus stops.
I've not seen Mercury.
There's a lot of bus stops. They look like the Brex ones, actually. Yeah. At first I thought they were Brex, and now when I see the black bus ad, I take a second look, and then it turns out to be Mercury.
Interesting.
Which is focused on checking and savings accounts for startup companies. So they push the analytics, dashboards, and payments kind of features. Focused on startup company needs.
It doesn't seem like Mercury is like that much different than Brex. Like, what do you think's Mercury's?
Right, yeah.
What's Mercury's competitive advantage? I mean, what do you think?
What's Brex's competitive advantage against Mercury?
So they were the first mover in the market. I mean, sounds like Mercury's a little bit of a copycat. I mean, I also haven't used Mercury. I just from how I've read about them and
maybe that you're getting that from the advertising.
Yeah, but also the products. Like, what's different about Mercury than like compared to Brex?
Well, I don't know that there has to be. You know, it's not like a market has 100% market share.
They could be multiple players. But
no,
I'm
fine with a 2% market share of this $100 billion market we just talked about. I'd be okay.
Yeah. I just haven't been interested by Mercury.
And more competition, the better.
Yeah, it pushes Brex to be a bit more competitive. Yeah.
No, and I'm sure there's dozens of other players that we don't know about.
Yeah, so. They have cool ads, but I don't know.
They
about
have
Mercury.
Cool ads.
Yeah, that's it. Besides that, they have really nothing else that makes me stand out, makes Mercury stand out. But didn't mean to detract your point.
Well, they are an FDIC-insured bank. Mm. So that's one thing.
I'm sure they're not a bank.
How can you have checking and savings accounts and have FDIC membership?
I'm sure they're using a different bank.
Or a bank charter.
Like a bank in a box or something.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. The bank that they're using
is an FDIC-insured bank.
As a service, is FDIC-insured.
So is Brex not FDIC-insured?
Well, maybe they're, again, like maybe their partner.
I'm sure they're probably like a web bank or something.
Whoever it is, cool. Yeah. Web bank out of Utah, right?
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Or Fifth Third or something, yeah.
Does Mercury have a card services?
Yeah, I'm sure they're doing banking as a service.
Yeah.
And as we looked at before, if they don't, they can get one right away.
Yeah,
because with an API, I think the price was like $8,000 a month. And I could offer my own credit card.
Yeah.
And it would go through there.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's, it would be fly by night exactly, because it'll still go through a real bank, go through their regulatory and Bank Secrecy Act, anti-money,
KYC,
money laundering, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it'll just all just be providing the marketing, basically.
So you could have a John card.
Yeah. Or let's
a
say,
Steve card, yeah.
Yeah, let's say Kaiser wanted to offer their own card and have certain benefits. They could just offer that if they wanted to, just about anybody. And I'm sure... what was that company you mentioned based out of Utah, the one that does banking as a service?
WebBank is one of them.
WebBank.
There's also Fifth Third Bank as well. They do a lot of partnerships.
Yeah, I'm sure they'd be happy to take the money and do that and put your face on every credit card that you issue.
Okay. Well,
that's your customer's problem, not theirs.
The future, yeah. That's the future.
It's the Bank of Sean.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah, lots of cool ideas this time. So let's see what else happens.
Yeah, sounds good. Huh?
All right, now it's time for our final bite, where we take a look at a number and the fascinating story behind it, especially the way you tell it, Sean.
Oh, thank you. So 5 million is my number. 5 million is the amount of seed financing a new blockchain-based company just got from Andreessen Horowitz, led by Andreessen Horowitz. This is a really cool concept, guys.
They must have had really good PowerPoint slides.
Yeah, they probably did. Just clean, like just as like a, the you know, as a consultant does best. So check this company out. These guys are really cool. What they're trying to do, they're called Airweave. They're a blockchain-based protocol focusing Airweave.
Oh, Airweave. Okay, yeah,
yeah,
got it.
Yeah, that's a different company, probably like a L'Oreal company. But Airweave, so it's a blockchain protocol used for storing internet information permanently. Okay, so think about this.
Wait, I thought every blockchain stores everything permanently.
So this is a digital, like a record, a digital file such as web pages, emails, and social media posts. That specifically, you use it for Airweave's browser extension. You have Airweave's browser extension on your Chrome or your Internet Explorer. And if you want to archive it for the rest of time into your own secure blockchain-based storage compartment, you use Airweave.
How do I do the opposite? Make it so nobody ever sees where I've been on the internet.
Yeah, that's Google Chrome incognito mode. So the this company's pretty cool. So their mission is to become the new library of Alexandria. So like they're trying to that's how they got the valuation, I'm sure, from Andreessen. The concept here is to use create a permaweb, which is an internet archive to allow people to do permanent storage that was not possible in the way that they perceive before. So pretty cool company, pretty cool concept, and we'll see. We'll see how they pan out. But keep an eye on this company, Airweave. Steve, what's your final bite?
I actually have a really depressing one. -61%. That is the number of students in the UK who say that money is actually causing them anxiety. So losing their money is causing them anxiety. It's a pretty number. Now, how is this fintech related? It's fintech related because actually, this is so funny, but Barclays in the UK introduced puppy therapy sessions in branches.
I did see this.
So if you're a Barclays customer, you can just go to a branch in the UK and cuddle a puppy and hopefully decrease your stress and anxiety levels because you're thinking about all the money that you have to pay back once you either finish school or go through whatever you're going through now. So pretty interesting.
The Facebook coin is going to offer virtual puppies.
There you go.
With your loan. Every time you pay back a loan.
You get a puppy?
You get a puppy.
Barclays will give you actual puppies to cuddle, which is pretty awesome. I think some workplaces now or some schools even have sort of a puppy room. So you can just go in there and cuddle a puppy and feel better about your life after 20 minutes.
Yeah, I think maybe that could be counterproductive. Sure, like there should be puppy cuddling, but at the same time, people should feel a little stressed paying back their money. A little bit of stress is good for the young
children. Hey, if you owe me money, I don't want you relaxing with puppies.
I want you
to get back to work.
Go get back to work, yeah, exactly.
Or like create a new revenue source, You don't have to just, you can be innovative and go out after work and, or do some side consulting or
mental
help
note,
a startup. Or
don't borrow money from Sean.
No.
He'll be on you.
Sean will bust your kneecaps for 20 bucks.
I need my returns.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my number. John, what you got?
All right. My final bite is 58. And that's the number of fintech unicorns there are in the world today.
So 58 fintech unicorns, John. What is their total valuation?
That's a good question. You would think it would be $58 billion, the way they should be valued. But no, it's actually $213.5 billion.
So about total valuation. $4 billion-ish per unicorn, like three-something per unicorn.
Yeah. And good thing WeWork's not in that, or else it would really bring down the average. There's some new ones in there, which we'll get into later. And it looks like the money's still flowing into fintech, and there'll still be more unicorns. I don't know if any of the I just took a brief look at the largest fintechs, and it doesn't look like any of them are teetering that we know about. So I think the number will keep growing for now. Then some might get bought out. I think is more likely.
There may be some mergers.
Some mergers.
Good stuff, John. Thanks.
Nice.
All right. If you want to keep up with more interesting stuff, please hit subscribe to keep up with all of our episodes. And thanks for listening.
Thanks, John. See y'all.
Ciao.